Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 16 of Bitter and Fertiles. I'm Mo.
I'm Christy.
And I'm Shelley.
And this is going to be published already. By the time this is published, it's going to be the new year, 2013.
Woo-hoo.
So we didn't even know that episode 15 was going to be our last episode of 2012, but apparently it was. So, you know, that's exciting. It was like we weren't meaning to take a Christmas break, especially me since I'm Jewish, but we ended up taking a Christmas break, listeners. So, yeah, sorry about that. But hey, you've got us for the new year. So good stuff. So we've got like an interesting show today. This was kind of my idea, because we've been, you know, talking about really complicated infertility stuff basically since we went on the air. But like one of the first things I said on our first episode was that we will be talking about cervical mucus, and then what ended up happening is that we never talked about cervical mucus.
So disappointing.
Yeah. It's terrible. So that's sad. Why I brought up the idea that I think it was really time to talk about cervical mucus.
Mm-hmm. It really is. That,
yeah, I mean, it's time to, you know, because people find us through like iTunes searches and stuff. And you know, not everybody that finds us is going through their like, you know, third IVF. Some people are kind of new to this whole infertility thing.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, yeah. My husband... We were having dinner with some friends last week, and he mentioned that I'm doing this podcast. And they were like, the girl was like, oh, you should send me a link, you know? And I'm like, I don't know if you'd really be interested. I mean, she's like so far from this world, you know? Yeah. And she was like, no, I mean, I'd like to hear about one. He was like, you know, it's kind of hard to understand though. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you guys are just talking about like, all these acronyms and all this lingo, and he's like, it's like another language, and I don't understand it when I listen to it.
Have we hit acronym status? Oh, wow. So maybe we need to do a rundown of acronyms, too.
Yeah, I think so. So basically, listeners, this is the Infertility 101 episode. This is what we're going to do today. We're going to, you know, if you listen, because, you know, we're funny and interesting. And if you don't know, we're going to teach you the acronyms. We're going to teach you how to look at your cervical mucus and how to temp and how to use pee sticks and when to, you know, kind of think about what to do when something's wrong and everything you possibly need to really navigate the world that is infertility.
It's infertility for dummies.
Yes, infertility for dummies. I like that.
Not that we think you're dumb, listeners.
We don't think you're dumb. Well, yeah, no, we don't think you're dumb. But I'm just kidding. You guys know I love you. We don't think you're dumb at all. But, you know, some people, you know, I had a while ago, like a year and a half ago, I put a post up on my Mommy Odyssey blog about what WTF is TTC, where mm-hmm. I did acronyms, and I wrote the acronym, like what AF meant, mm-hmm. which we will talk about in a second, and an Ali blog vet commented that she'd never had any idea what AF meant. She just knew it was some sort of acronym for period.
I love it. I do. So we need to talk about it. And one of the things that'll be good is we'll talk about the different levels, because there's actually different levels for acronyms depending upon where you're at. So there's kind of the beginning end. Yeah. And then there's the more advanced ones. And it's obviously you learn what you need to know as you go along. So if nothing else, if you are brand new to this community and you are sharing these podcasts and people want to know how in the world do I navigate this world, because I have no clue what's going on, this is the episode to start with.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you think your lady parts are broken?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So what do you guys want to do first? Do you want to do acronyms first and then like go through the chronological?
Let's
go. I think we should start at the beginning of like temping and like monitoring your fertility signs and using OPKs. And yes, I think yes. And I feel like we'll touch upon the acronyms as we come across them.
Right. And the other thing to bring up also with the OPKs is also the book. The book that everybody, be fertile or infertile, ends up going to, which is the Taking Charge of Your Fertility by Toni.
I wish I had it with me. I could have just referred to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So guys, okay, listeners, here, this is interesting because I had never heard of Taking Charge of Your Fertility until one, I'd read on one blog somebody going TCOYF, and I'm like, what the F is TCOYF? And I started Googling it like crazy, and I finally found this thing, and then I ended up ordering the book that day, and I swear to God, ladies, this thing changed my life.
Oh, yes.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
I mean,
it's the Bible.
Yeah.
Yes. It is the Bible. It should, every woman, doesn't matter if you're infertile or non-infertile, every woman needs to own a copy of this book. It's very dense.
Mm-hmm.
No lie. It's not like an easy, fun read. It is very dense.
It's not a hard read, though. I wouldn't say it's a hard read.
It's not a hard read, but it's not something you want to read on the beach either. Oh, you know?
No. No.
Well, actually, I would encourage anybody to read it on the beach. And let us know how that goes over.
Well, it's more like a textbook. It's not a novel. It's like a textbook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a textbook, so you want to like maybe go like a couple chapters at a time, and then basically you use it for reference. Mm-hmm. You just use it for reference whenever you feel the need to, you know, look something up. So Taking Charge of Your Fertility is where to start. And we're going to give some of like the basics of what Taking Charge of Your Fertility does, plus adding other things. Basically, what Taking Charge of Your Fertility is a sex ed class for people who aren't in middle school.
Well, I would sit down and say that this thing should be taught in middle school, because there were things that I was reading where it was like, why didn't we talk about this? And the reason we didn't talk about this is because our culture has such a huge hang up about sex and one's body
parts
and anything along those lines, and it all being gross. That's what it comes down to. So what they teach you is they teach you about fertilization, and they talk about the function of your reproductive organs, but they do not talk about how your body functions in response to the fact that you are a woman or even a man. Yeah. And what is going on. Like for years I knew prior to my period that I would get this weird discharge, and I just figured that it was just something that came up ahead of time, and it was just me, and it was weird. The fact that it had anything to do with one, being normal, and two, actually potentially helping me conceive, it blew my mind. It really did.
That was a revelation for me, too. I remember telling friends after I read that chapter, being like, you know how sometimes, like, in the middle of your cycle, like, you have a few days where, like, it's just kind of, like, there's a lot of stuff coming out. I was like, did you know that's when you're ovulating? Like, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
It's huge. So let's start with that. Okay, so let's say you guys, you and your partner have been having sex for about 3 months without protection, and nothing's happening. Because 3 months really is the average for a healthy couple to get pregnant one try.
I mean, technically, the one thing to note, technically, according to the data, it will take, most couples, it takes about a year. So if you're at 3 months and nothing has happened and you're starting to panic, don't yet.
Panic. It just means that you need to start being a little bit more proactive.
Yes. Right?
And there are a couple of ways you can do that, because, you know, when you first start trying to have a baby, you don't think about ovulation as a specific time of the month. Like, nobody actually realizes that you've only got about an area of 3 days per month where you can actually get pregnant. So when you're trying for a baby, usually when you start trying, you just kind of, you know, jump into bed and just have lots of sex and hope everything is okay.
Right, because that's what we've all been told, right? One time having sex and bang, it happens.
Yeah, one night.
So, but that's really not the case. So you need to start, if it's been like 3-ish months, then the first thing you really need to do is kind of figure out, are we having sex at the right time? And so what is the right time? So there's a couple of different ways of figuring out what the right time is. And I think we'll start with the simplest one, which is my favorite phrase and yours, cervical mucus.
Yep. So how do you check cervical mucus, Mo? Can you explain that for us?
Yeah. So first of all, let's just say that if you haven't yet started tracking your periods, which is something, again, not a lot of people think to do, you need to start tracking your periods and start figuring out what day of your cycle is on, what day of your cycle you're on. So right. When you track your period, you mark the first day that you have bleeding, and that would be your cycle day one.
Which is completely counterintuitive, but trust us on this. Even your OBGYN will consider that day one. So.
But make sure it's the first day of full bleeding. If you're spotting before, it's the first day that you need a tampon or a pad. It's, you know, when it's really coming down.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. So that is cycle day one. And also, just for a heads up, if you are able to become pregnant, that is considered the first day of your pregnancy.
Yeah. So, like, if you get pregnant, once you find out you're pregnant, you're already 4 weeks pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of awesome. I kind of like that. It's like head start.
You know, there you go. So let's talk about cervical mucus. Now, basically, cervical mucus is the stuff that comes out, and it changes consistency depending on where you are in your cycle. And there's different kinds of consistencies. There's watery consistency. There's you know, kind of sticky and pasty consistency, and of course there's what my old friend who no longer blogs, unfortunately, Runny Yoke, used to call vag gold,
mm-hmm.
Which is egg white cervical mucus. Mm-hmm. EWCM, that's an acronym, EWCM, egg white cervical mucus. So let's talk about what egg white cervical mucus is. That happens, that basically starts happening, I think, about 2 days before you ovulate.
Well, that depends, but go ahead. If
you get ideals first.
Yeah, go to ideals. So if you do have it, it should start about 2 days before you ovulate.
Two, 3 days before you ovulate is really the normal, like a PCOS girl, usually, like a lot of PCOS girls like me, don't ever get vag gold. But for normal
PCOS.
People, that's...
That's an acronym.
Right, PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is basically what, like, it's 10% of women have it. It's irregular ovulation, sometimes coupled with higher risk of diabetes, sometimes coupled with issues with weight, sometimes coupled with a little bit too much hair on your face. And most often coupled with some sort of infertility issue. So I'm the class.
That's the advanced class.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that.
Don't worry about that yet. But I am a classic PCOSer, as in I'm fat, I'm furry, and I've got ovulation issues. So, you know.
It always makes me laugh when you say that.
Anyway, so back to the vag gold, though. So you've got, so basically the way you look for this egg white cervical mucus, which is what will kind of indicate to you that you are about to ovulate and you shouldn't have lots and lots of sex with your partner, is basically just by sticking your finger up there. There's really no better way. You stick two fingers up there, you kind of pull out what's in there and you look at it. And if there's a good amount of stuff, and if it becomes stretchy between your fingers, like a little bit like an egg white, then you know you've got egg white cervical mucus, and it's time to have lots of sex. Right?
Yes.
And that's, again, this is ideal. And the reason that we bring up the fact that it's ideal is because even though I don't have PCOS, I rarely get egg white cervical mucus.
Me too. It was rare for me.
Yeah. So it was one of those things I actually found, and Shelly, you can probably, you and I talked a lot about this stuff. There's things you can do to increase production. Like I was on green tea, grapefruit juice. The warning about grapefruit juice is that it does work. I did get some with it. But grapefruit juice also can counteract with a lot of other medications. So if you're taking meds, talk with your doctor before you start consuming copious amounts of grapefruit juice because you don't want to counteract the effect of your medications.
And it's really high in sugar.
Right, exactly.
Explain for a second what cervical mucus does, because I think this is important, why everybody looks for it. It's not just a sign of ovulation. It also basically greases up that whole area and makes it easier for the sperm.
More than that, actually. So when it's that thin, so your cervical mucus, when it's clumpy like that, it actually acts as a barrier. So it will inhibit any foreign sperm from coming in and hanging out. So what's happening is it's thinning up. It's supposed to be thinning up, and then it actually no longer acts as a block. So it actually allows sperm to come in. And then you're talking about lube. It's more than lube. It actually acts as a carrier, so it helps the sperm be able to survive. So sperm and egg white cervical mucus, and this is important, ladies, can live for 5 days. So when you hear about women getting pregnant when they've had their period, what has happened is that they had their period, but they also were getting really close to ovulation, so they also had egg white cervical mucus around that time, or something that carried. And so the sperm actually lived for 5 days in some cases.
Yep, they can live for up to 5 days. And then once you know how to recognize ovulation in a myriad of ways, and you see that you're not getting egg white cervical mucus, you don't necessarily have to use all of these teas and stuff. There is an amazing lube called Pre-Seed, which also helps with this stuff. I love Pre-Seed. It's not cheap. It's not always easy to find.
Do we want to tell them about our story?
Oh, yes. About we totally need to tell them
the story. Or me and the Pre-Seed, I should say, actually.
Okay, yeah, we totally need to. So everybody, ladies, here's the thing. I live in Israel, you guys know this. There's no Pre-Seed in Israel. You need to order this stuff online. And I was running out of Pre-Seed, and also I didn't have any more Rolls-Royce pee sticks, which you guys know I need my Rolls-Royce pee sticks. So I went on online, and I ordered from a website, and then I had it shipped over to Christy, and Christy was going to just ship it over to me in Israel, because that was easier than having an international shipping through that website. So Christy, take it from there.
So yeah, the box came. And I did a little bit of repacking, just like stripping off some of the labels and repackaging. And this was right before the Christmas holiday season. So of course the post office is filled to the brim with people who have packages who are pushing one another and they just want to get their packages out the door. So this is the first time I've ever shipped anything internationally, and I'm filling out the customs form, and Mo was wise enough to warn me ahead of time, check gift, which I did do, but they still had me declare everything that was in there. So fortunately, I knew what was in there and I was writing everything down. But when I got to this type of lubricant that Mo was talking about, the Pre-Seed, I just wrote down Pre-Seed. So loudly, the cashier at the United States Postal Service wanted to know what Pre-Seed was. Mm-hmm. And if I was, you know, at the beginning of this journey, I would have turned bright red and been really embarrassed and kind of mumbled something. But being so far along, like 3 years along with trying to have a baby, I just kind of looked at her straight in the eye and I'm like, I don't care. And I just told her, I said, it's sperm-friendly lubricant. This is with the post office filled with people with strollers and everything else. So I will say it's a lot of fun to say stuff like that because, one, it's the best way to quiet a room. And two, that woman is never going to ask again what Pre-Seed is. So
you gave her some really raunchy dinner conversation. Next time she's at like a holiday party or, you know, she gets a little alcohol, she's like, oh my God, you would not believe what happened at work the other day.
Oh, I think I gave it to lady everybody. Walks in. With this crazy package. Yeah, no, it was lovely. I will say with Pre-Seed, what's really cool about it is that it has these applicators where you can actually, for those of you who have men that don't like knowing about the business, about the fact that you're trying to make a baby. And men tend to get, you know, they get, it's funny. It's like the one thing that will turn them off from sex is like, let's make a baby. And they're like, nope. What you can do is you can fill those applicators and you basically can pre-fill yourself ahead of time. And they recommend you do this at least 15 minutes ahead of time so that they're none the wiser.
Yep.
Pre-fill yourself sounds like you're a jelly donut or something.
Oh, you are, though.
You are.
So now we've kind of covered egg white cervical mucus, and now we've got to talk about the timing of when to start looking for this stuff. Because here's where things get a little complicated, okay? Because even, and this makes me so sad, because even gynecologists will say this, and you'll ask a gynecologist when you ovulate, and most of them will look you straight in the eye and say 14 days after your period starts, as in cycle day 14. That is wrong. It could be right for some people. Don't misunderstand me. There are women who ovulate on cycle day 14. That is the average, just like the average length of a woman's cycle is 28 days. So ovulation would be mid-cycle. However, that is not always necessarily the case.
Yep. And by the way, acronym for you, so cycle day equals CD. Yeah. So if you see people putting down CD 14, they are cycle day 14 days since the first day of their period.
Since the first day of AF, which is short for ant flow, which is period. So basically, the recommended time to start really checking for this stuff is cycle day 5, or basically as soon as you stop bleeding. Once you've done it for a couple of months and things are relatively consistent, then you don't really need, like, if you've checked for like 2 months and you've found vag gold every single time on cycle day 15, then you'll know not that you don't need to check on cycle day 5 anymore. Though I have to admit, it is kind of addictive once you start checking. But like once you've got an idea, you can start checking a little closer to the dates that you've had a history of doing it. But basically, you want to start checking on cycle day 5. And that also goes for OPKs. This is a good time to kind of talk about OPKs, because that's also something that you want to start doing on cycle day 5 if you're,
which stands for
ovulation predictor kits.
Right.
OPKs are ovulation predictor kits. They are pee sticks, yes, that you use to see if you are about to ovulate. Basically, what happens is, actually, Christy, why don't you go through the hormones of ovulation here?
Oh, God, okay. So there's a lot. There's a lot going on, and I will emphasize that if you really want to know, go online, go to Wikipedia, put in menstrual cycle hormones, and they'll take you through. The major ones that you need to, that people usually think about, there's about three of them you need to think about. One is called estrogen. So if everyone's probably familiar with it, because women have estrogen and men have testosterone. I will debunk that, that cultural myth a little bit and say that we have both. It's just the amount that we have. Some women tend to have more estrogen. Anyways, your estrogen levels are really the things that take, those start to rise at the beginning of your cycle. And the whole point behind that is really to help build lining. The second half of your cycle,
the lining of your uterus.
Right. Which is where any embryo that is created through fertilization will implant. And that's where the baby will grow. So, then the second half of your cycle, because your cycle is actually split into two phases. The second half is known as the luteal phase, and the main hormone that takes over there is something called progesterone. And progesterone's role basically is, and we all make progesterone, but when it spikes, and everybody has its spike in the second half of their cycle, it's basically helping your body prepare for sustaining a pregnancy. And actually, where that progesterone comes from is it comes from the follicle that released the egg. So when you release an egg from your ovary, that follicle that that egg was growing in, that becomes something known as the corpus lutea. And that is what makes progesterone.
And that sustains the pregnancy until the placenta is fully formed.
Exactly.
If you do end up having a pregnancy.
Yeah. So you'll hear people talk about like me taking like, or Shelly talking about taking progesterone and oil. That's basically for us to be able to add in more and supplement and really sustain it, especially for those of us who have gone through treatment. The final hormone you need to worry about is something that's called luteinizing hormone, or LH. And
yes.
And that, what that does is that actually triggers ovulation. It's really cool because it's low. It starts out low. And then right around the time that you start to ovulate, it spikes. And the whole point behind that spike is actually to signal for the release of the egg. And it takes, it doesn't happen instantly. It's not like within the matter of minutes, but it does happen over the course of a couple of days. And so OPK's ovulation predictor kits actually measure the amount of luteinizing hormone, or LH, that's in your system.
Right. And so, so basically, and here's, there's a couple of misconceptions about ovulation predictor kits, because they are on a lot of levels similar to their sister, the home pregnancy test, in that there's, you know, you pee on it and there are lines to look at. But there are some major differences between an OPK and a home pregnancy test. So basically what happens when you pee on an OPK is that it will measure your LH level, but you always, or most of the time, you have some presence of LH in your system. So there will always, there will more often than not, you will get a second line on that OPK telling you that you have LH in your system. Now, what's the trick? How do you know when you've got enough LH that you are ovulating? Well, it's when that line becomes really, really, really dark. So you've got two lines on an OPK, the control line, which is what always, always turns pink or blue or whatever your OPK color is. And then you've got the second line, which is the line that actually will tell you what your LH measurement is. And that line, in order for your LH to be high enough for you to be ovulating within the next 36 hours, that line needs to be darker than your control line. Once you've got a line on your OPK that is darker than your control line, then you know you will be ovulating sometime within the next 36 hours. That's
now,
kind of the rule.
I will say that I didn't use OPKs religiously, but when I did use them, I never really got a positive, a clear positive. It was always just kind of like two lines, but never this like super dark test line.
Yeah.
So that was never a reliable indicator for me personally.
Yeah, for me, it always has been. I think it really does change from person to person. OPKs are a really, really good solution for women like me who like to pee on stuff and aren't crazy about temping, which we'll talk about in a second.
We'll talk.
But they're not for everybody, because really, basically from my experience, because there was a point where I was doing LH blood tests and OPKs at the same time, just cause I was curious. Mm-hmm. And it really starts getting positive from around like most OPKs from around when your LH is 70. And some people might not get to 70 in their LH spike. You know, they might just get to 60, or they might, you know, whatever, their LH might be 5 usually, and then they just jump to 60. So it doesn't work for everybody, but it does work for a lot of women, and I'm a big fan, but that's just because I like to pee on stuff.
So, I mean, and we should definitely talk about that. But on that note, one should also note there are many different types of OPKs. So there are the ones that Mo's talking about where you have to basically sit and discern lines. And that you can get the very cheap variety, which is the Wandos that you can order online. You can get the more expensive varieties like Clear Blue Easy and so forth. And then there are the ones, like, I've only done OPKs for a limited amount of time because I hate squinting and looking at things and trying to figure out if something is darker or not. For the limited amount of time I did OPKs, I loved the digitals because the digitals took it all out. There was no guesswork because you looked for a smiley face or not.
Or a yes or no. I did have the pleasure of using digital pee sticks for the first time these last two cycles. And it was lovely. And the way you do it is you pee the same time each day. And not only does it have a smiley face for you, it actually does it relative to you. It remembers your previous readings, which is very cool. Like the actual pee stick holder reader thing remembers what your previous readings were and does things relative to you, which is very cool. So basically with the pee sticks, so you want to basically start the first time you do it, you want to start on cycle day 5. Again, once you've done it for a few months, you'll have a better idea of when you need to do it so you don't have to pee all the time. Although, you know, you could just pee all the time because it's fun. So you start on cycle day 5. Now, here's another big misconception, which is the time you're supposed to pee on this stuff. We'll talk about testing for pregnancy later on. But testing for pregnancy and pregnancy pee sticks work differently than OPKs do, and that includes the time of day that you need to pee on them. Mm-hmm. Because LH metabolizes in your urine at a different time than HCG, which is the pregnancy hormone. So people usually know that if you're really early on and you want to test for pregnancy, the most reliable time to test for pregnancy is with FMU, first morning urine, the pee that you have as soon as you wake up. That is not true for OPKs. OPKs are best when tested in the evening or in the afternoon, because by then the LH will have metabolized in your urine much better. And also, you need to test it at the same time each day. So if you can test at 8 p.m., you can test at 4 p.m., you can test at 11 p.m., but if you test it at 8 p.m. on cycle day 5, test it 8 p.m. on cycle day 6, et cetera, et cetera. Because basically you're looking for a fertile window. So you could very well have a surge that could be detected at 8 p.m. on cycle day 15, let's say, but will be gone by 8 p.m. the next day. So you want 24-hour windows, no more. Does that make sense, ladies? I hope that was clear.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of preference. I think part of that also comes down to how you are as a person. Like, I am, or at least my body likes to be more of a morning person. I am not a night owl. And so, versus I think other people are more night owls. So I've actually met people who, like, for me, it didn't work to test in the evening. I completely missed windows. Yeah. It did not work. But testing not in early in the morning, like when I first got up, but in the morning, so probably around like 10 a.m., that seemed to work.
See, I can never do that because I'm at work at 10 a.m. Or 2 p.m. or 4 p.m. So it was like I'd have to – I mean, there was 1 month where I was bringing my OPKs with me to work. But it was just – it just felt insane. Like, it was just so stressful for me to think about, like, holding pee and testing at the same time and testing in the work bathroom. Like, that's why OPKs, like, always just really stressed me out, because it was just, like, this level of figuring out when to pee on a stick every single day.
Right. And so I think what Shelley's bringing up, and it's really important, is you need to figure out for you what system works. So, like, for Mo, OPKs are gold. And I'm completely surprised, actually, you haven't bought a fertility monitor. So if you really get into it, one of the things you may want to consider investing in is a fertility monitor. Those things are expensive, though. So that's the thing.
Yeah, I never bought it. It's just because it's so expensive.
Yeah,
it's
so they're usually like $200. But if you like all this stuff, like really sitting down and being religious about tracking and also wanting to have all this information on that end, the fertility monitor will do it. You can get the information in another way, though. And Shelley, do you want to talk about temping?
Sure. So basically, there's three main ways of tracking your fertility signs. Cervical mucus is one, and temping is another of the big ones. And that is basically, you've probably heard about people You might have seen the acronym BBT, which is basal body temperature. And it's basically, taking your temperature right as soon as you wake up in the morning, before you've done anything, before you've even really moved. You just set an alarm for the exact same time every day, and you reach over, grab your thermometer, and you take your temperature. And it really varies for each person, but the general pattern is when you're, pre-ovulation or WTO, waiting to ovulate, your temperatures will be lower. And this has to do with, how the different hormones circulating affect your temperatures. And you can look that up as to how that works. But generally, before you ovulate, your temperatures are lower. And then after you ovulate, there's a spike. And they remain higher, until your period comes, and right around the time your period comes, they drop back down to lower again. Mm-hmm. So while it's not an indication of necessarily when to have sex, for me it became that way because those other signs didn't really work for me, and I just kind of found a pattern in my charts and used it that way. But it is an indicator. It is kind of a confirmation that you have ovulated because your temperature, in most cases, will go up. Right. So,
yeah, and then the thing is to add onto this too is really once you have done that for 3-4 months, you will start seeing patterns emerge, mm-hmm. and you will be able to kind of predict when you're going to ovulate. Plus, depending on what program you use, and we'll talk about that in a second, you will know within, a day of when you ovulated. And then, once you ovulate, you've got a 24-hour window where that egg is alive. So it, so you still have got a chance.
Well, 12 hour actually. So it's a 12 hour.
Isn't it?
Yep. It's
really,
12.
I've always thought it was 24.
Nope. You've got a 12 hour window. So that's actually, the one thing that brings up and,
no shit.
Nope. I'm serious. The spike is good for being able to verify that ovulation has happened. But I actually found that after 2 months, because my cycles were so regular, it was actually even after a month, I was able to figure out where I was ovulating. For me, I ovulate traditionally around CD12. So I now know that it's CD12, and that was, I had that window. And it also made sense for me with other signs that I was getting, because I get this full feeling, I kind of feel sick, other things along those lines around that time, and I realize what's going on is I'm getting a hormone shift. And that's why my body feels weird. So, but
Christy, I was sure eggs last for 24 hours. See, even hours. I'm learning new stuff today.
Yeah, no, it's only 12 hours. So it's this is the nice thing. Sperm live for 5 days. Your egg only has 12 hours.
I know.
So anyway,
talk about chauvinism and
Well, more importantly, any teenage girl that sits down and tells me, oh, it's a fluke. It may be a fluke, but I look at them, I'm like, that was really, really bad luck on your end. And
oh, yeah.
But this is also the reason why I think this should be taught in middle school, to sit down and say, guys, it can last for 5 days. You got a 12-hour shot, but 5 days. And this stuff, spreads up the tubes. So it's just waiting. So why? Yeah. And I think telling them that, if I was a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old boy, or even hell, if I was a 22-year-old male, I'd be scared shitless.
Yeah, very true. So let's talk a little bit more about temping, because here's the interesting thing. A lot of people, I did the temping thing for a while too. I liked it because it gave me something to obsess over.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're kind of an OCD person, really looking for control, temping is awesome.
Okay, so before we go there, I want to ask. So thermometers, there are BBT thermometers that are out there. One thing, ladies, you have to buy a basal body temperature thermometer. But ladies, is there specific brands of thermometers? Like with OPKs, there are specific types of OPKs. Like the digitals are usually the Clear Blue Easies, and then Clear Blue Easy does fertility monitors too. But then you can get cheapy OPKs that you usually end up obsessing over. What about thermometers? Are there thermometers that are good, or
I just Funny got enough, the store brand.
You bought the store brand.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just grabbed a plain old digital thermometer, and I was that, and that worked fine me with too. Me. And I know it did. It did just the same. Really, honestly think that the BBT thermometers are a bit of a racket.
Well, there
They're
is
just like pink or purple.
They are. So yeah. I am going to advocate if you go online and you do buy a BBT thermometer, a good brand is something called BD. And they're a big pharmaceutical company. For those of us that are giving injections, if you look at some of your box of alcohol wipes, you'll notice that either the syringes or the alcohol wipes come from BD. So if they're a good brand, if you are needing to buy them online because you can't find them anywhere in the stores or don't want to find them anywhere in the stores, I recommend that brand. And my thermometer, ironically enough, still works. After 3 years, we now use it as a way for measuring, like, if we've been sick. So that's, I've been watching Gray wandering around with a pink thermometer in his mouth, and I'm like, on so many levels, that's so wrong. But the thermometer is still lasting. So it's one of the big things is I hear stories of people doing the BBT thermometers, and they talk about the fact that the batteries die. The other thing is you can go old school and then get the glass ones.
Yeah.
Read
you can even take your temperature in your vagina.
You can. Uh-huh. Yes, and you can do that too. So the first thing in the morning is you can shove that thing up someplace where the sun doesn't shine and wait for it to come up. Breed.
Hey, listen, if you're thinking you might be infertile, shoving stuff up your vag is good practice.
I know, because you're
ready to it.
Yeah, for the wants. No, I agree. Yeah. So the thing I will say is just read and do some research on it. It doesn't need to be like weeks worth of research, but spend like a day and read through. I like the digital, and the thing that I really liked about my thermometer, because I was taking my temperature so early in the morning, was it did two things. One, it had a light on it, so I could actually see in the darkness what the heck was going on. And two, it saved the last temperature. So when at 6 a.m., if I happened to fall back asleep, because I literally would take my temperature and then fall and pass back out for like another 20 minutes.
Yeah, me too.
Invariably, I would forget what it was. So it was nice because I could click on it and the last temperature it took would come up and then I could record.
Yeah. The most important thing is handy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most important thing, no matter what you do, whatever kind of thermometer you use, whatever time you take it, no matter manner you take it, the most important thing is consistency, especially within a given cycle. Like, you never want to be changing thermometers or changing times that you're temping or ways that you're temping mid-cycle, because that could really, really throw off your numbers and confuse everything.
All right. So now just be aware if you do end up having to, because batteries crap out, just, you know, it's the big thing you're looking for. And I think this is the thing everybody freaks out about. You assume that it's specifically the numbers. You're looking for patterns. Right. So it's a global picture. So this is truly looking, you're not looking at trees, you're looking at forests.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing that a lot of you might be feeling a little intimidated. I have a personal recommendation in terms of what to do with those temperatures. Because if you read Taking Charge of Your Fertility, it will teach you how to chart your basal body temperature. However, these days, we are in the modern age. There is an amazing website called Fertility Friend. They also make a nice handy-dandy little mobile app. And what they do is that they will make the chart for you. Like, all you have to do is input the temperature that you've got into, you know, their little system and input, you know, the time that you took it, et cetera, and they will create the chart for you. Not only that, they will actually tell you once you're far enough along in your cycle, they will actually mark where you ovulated. Like, it's called Fertility Friend Crosshairs.
TCOYF. The book we were talking about before, their website also has free tools as well as forums. That's actually where Christy and I met, was on the TCOYF forums, but they also have.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the warning about the forums are great, especially if you are new to this world and are just trying to figure things out. The one warning about the forums, I found it was really easy to get sucked in and end up spending the entire day just responding to people because it wasn't like 5 or 6 people. It was like at times 20 to 30 people. And they really do these, they they communicate with one another. And so you do updates where you actually find that you're going through and reading back on threads and then updating people and thinking about things along the way. But so on one end, don't stress. But on the other end, if you are looking just for people that are kind of in similar spots as you and just kind of supporting people along the way, it can be a lot of fun. And I would say with
the forums. Yeah, we talk about blogging a lot here, but we rarely talk about forums. And that's really, Christine and Shelley, where you guys got your, you know, online start.
Yeah,
totally.
It was really good. And we can definitely talk about that a little bit later. But yes, as far as TCOYF, they do have, that was actually when I was tracking, I did it both paper-wise because I really like to be able to have paper copies, and then it was something I brought with me when I went to go see my doctor, but also I did do it online, and it was good for being able to sit down and kind of reset where I thought things were, and it saved charts for a while so I could actually go back and look at them. And then the other thing that was nice is when we were on the forums, you could share charts. So if I was confused about things, other people could sit and look at my chart and say, oh, this is what I'm seeing along the way. So, and this is what's nice about these charts is, so we're talking about more, and the book will get into this, like traditional charts of things being low, and then you're looking for things to shift to be high. It's also a way for a lot of women, it's really a good indicator of if they're ovulating or not, because you can actually see cycles where you're what's known as anovulatory, which means you're not ovulating. And those charts, tend to, after you see patterns, like if you see two or three of them, you can start seeing a pattern where things aren't shifting.
So. Yeah, there's other information you can get from temping, you know,
right.
Again, like Christy said, just by looking at patterns, you can, you know, maybe you'll realize that, yes, you're ovulating every month, but your luteal phase, LP, which is the time between ovulation and getting your period, is short. And that can kind of give you some clues about maybe why you're having trouble and some different, you know, treatments that you can try. What are some of the other things that you can find out from temping?
One of the things I really, so finding out the luteal phase was short was a big one for me because I ovulated on CD12, but then the other thing I noticed is I was starting to bleed around so DPO stands for days past ovulation. So 12 DPO, which usually you want things around like between 12 and 14. I noticed I was on the shorter end, and so that was an indication. The other thing people talk about are implantation dips. So what will happen is that your temp will be higher, and then all of a sudden, probably anywhere between like 7 DPO to 11 DPO, you'll see your temperature drop and come back up. And people freak when they see it. They're like, shoot, the cycle has failed. And it's usually accompanied with a little bit of bleeding. But that actually, if you do get implantation, it's actually it can be an indicator that you are getting an implantation that has happened. So,
I mean, again, but that's less reliable. Just like there's a triphasic pattern once you're pregnant. It's kind of like a spiky 3-ridge thing on your chart. That's
like chart gold.
Yeah, that's like chart gold. And I actually, with Nadav, I was temping and I had a triphasic pattern and an implantation dip.
Wow.
Yeah. That was like, you know, I hit, you know, charting pay dirt. But but the thing is that, but that doesn't always happen. From what I understand, it only happens about 20-30% of charts. But what's really important about charting, and that is, unless your doctor is a Neanderthal, which I have actually had a doctor laugh at me. Generally speaking, most doctors will find this information helpful, even if you can't really, there's stuff that they can make out that you can't, you know, and that's something too. And the thing about taking charge of your fertility, and I think, you know, the author whose name escapes me right now.
Toni Weschler.
Weschler, yeah.
Yes, thank you. So she kind of rallies against doctors that keep information from their patients, and I agree with that very much. And she's very much about being aware of your body, and with all due respect to doctors, you should know what's going on too, and here's the way for you to do it. So, you know, that's a good indication of whether you've got a good doctor, and that is a doctor that respects your, you know, your wish to be aware of what's going on with your body and doesn't look at you funny when you temp because he's got penis size issues.
Well, and I think the thing that you're bringing up is we've talked about this before with doctors. If you can talk with your doctor and really get it, have more of a back and forth and more of a dialogue, It's always better. So what Mo's bringing up is if you walk in and they sneer at you or tell you you don't need to do this, or they look at you like you're completely funny, don't even stay. I would basically sit down and look at them and say, you're not billing my insurance, and I would walk out the door. Because then that's an indication you don't want to be there. Most people, most science-minded people, get excited by data. And so I had an OB that was consistently would tell people, oh yeah, the 14th day of your cycle. And she would consistently say that. As soon as I put the charts in front of her, it was like the rhetoric that she was giving to everybody else because they were freaking out, went out the door, and she's like, ooh. And she sat down and immediately started walking through things with me. And so that was cool. So actually, I think most of your doctors will get excited when they see charts, and they will actually also, it also is a launch point for them, because in all honesty, for a lot of people, the first step is to sit down and to look at them and say, so either you need to have sex or you need to time intercourse, or in some cases, it's even gone so far to say, you know, that birth control you're taking, you need to stop it. And for a lot of the population, people, unfortunately, remember, most pregnancies right now in the United States, 50% of them are unexpected. For a lot of people, it's just simply doing those three things. That's enough. So if you're coming in and you're showing them your charts, they already know you're at a different, you're at level two, so to speak. So
I think that's another important point about charting, though, is, again, just to not, I mean, I am definitely an OCD person. It is so easy, even when you're trying to see the forest and not the trees, it is so easy to get bogged down in, well, you know, on this cycle, my temps did this stair step pattern, and this cycle, you know, went straight up. It, you know, it's really easy to get really granular on the details. But when I brought my charts in to show my RE on our first meeting, he like glanced at them. I mean, he didn't like shun me for you know, he thought it was great that I had been charting, but he just he glanced at them so quickly and was like, yeah, this looks good. You generally have a you know, the rising pattern, you know, whereas I was like, yeah, but here it went, it was the same for a day and then it went up and then it stayed the same again, you know, like all that kind of stuff. Does it, like when we say see the forest for the trees, we really mean like you can look at the chart and you can just see it, you know, just a shape.
And so don't look at the trees, look at the forest. That's that's basically the big lesson. And I agree with that. I had like months, and this is part of the reason why my therapist made me stop temping. Because I would just stare at my chart for hours, looking at every spike, looking at every, like on one day in the morning I would get a certain temp and I would be like, yes, and then the next day I would be like completely devastated because of the temperature. It was insane. It was not healthy. So really, you know, look at it as a way to see an overall pattern over a period of time, more than anything else.
Okay. So I want to move on to the final sign, because even though this one takes a little bit of practice, ladies, but actually looking at cervical position. So if you're going up there and looking for the vag gold, you're going to notice that there are times where you're going to hit your cervix, which is the bottom part of your uterus. There are going to be other times where it's just like clear sailing and you can't get up there. And how I act, the reason I actually started following it is for a while there, sex was painful. And I was noticing that there were certain times a month where it wasn't painful, and there were other points in time in the month where it was painful. So I was actually going in and seeing my gyno and talking with them about that, and they were looking at me like I was at, like I was on the moon, and tested me up and down for STDs and other things like that. I had no idea the fact that my cervix was actually raising and lowering based on where I was in my cycle. And so that was the other thing that when I read Taking Charge of Your Fertility, finding out that that was happening, it was like another light went on. It was like, oh, well, that explains a lot. So,
although I have to admit, I've never been able to do the cervical height thing. Like, I never got it.
Oh, really?
I tried. I never, ever, ever managed to like figure out what the hell's going on.
It works like a charm for me. And actually, that is a better indicator, in all honesty, than the mucus.
Well, I think, I mean, and that just goes to show that every woman is different.
Right. So it's so what they will talk about in the book is that you want to go for two out of three if possible. So figure out which of your two you're comfortable with and go with it.
Are more reliable, like which are more, you know, indicative for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Because my cervix, even when I'm on fertility medications, it will get very, very high right before I ovulate. And actually, it was how I knew when I was in my luteal phase. It was how I was actually monitoring that to figure out if a cycle was a bust or not on top of the temps. Because it would stay low during my luteal phase. But then if it started to raise again, I knew I was going to get my period.
Okay, so basically the three things are a temperature spike, egg white cervical mucus, and a high cervix.
I stopped open.
Yeah. So those are the three things you're looking for, and you want 2 out of 3 really to confirm that you are about to pop. And then, of course, if you don't want to look for anything, just get some pee sticks. And you'll be fine. See, this is why I did pee sticks for so long. I did pee sticks for 1.5 years before I started temping. And the only reason I started temping was because I just needed a little bit more control.
Yep.
Because, I mean, obviously you always have control over the situation and that's what happens. And, right. You know, we have total control over everything we do. She said cynically. Anyway,
all right. So this is the 101. Now we're moving on to being able to start talking about people about this. And obviously, a lot of people don't have the scientific background to be able to sit down and start talking about things. And also, actively talking about this stuff with people, it can get long, it can get laborious, it can be embarrassing. Hence the acronyms.
Yes. Yes. So let's talk about acronyms. Because again, if you're gonna hop onto a forum, if you're gonna, you know, basically, unfortunately, listen to this show, we try to avoid them, but we end up hitting them anyway. You're gonna come across these acronyms, and there are some ones that really annoy me. I admit some of them are forum code acronyms. Some of them are actual acronyms of stuff that happens. It kind of changes. So let's start. So first let's kind of recap what we have so far. Okay. We have, AF, which is Aunt Flo.
Mm-hmm.
We have cycle day, which is CD.
Mm-hmm.
We have DPO, which is days past ovulation. OPKs, ovulation predictor kits.
RE, which is for a reproductive endocrinologist or a fertility doctor.
Yeah.
EWCM, which is egg white cervical mucus.
EWCM, or just CM, which is cervical mucus.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then there's the infamous ones. So there's TTC, which stands for
trying to conceive.
And then people always bring these up, even people that are most people understand what a BFP or a BFN is. What is a BFP?
A BFP is you can either say it's a big fat positive or a big fucking positive, depending on your mood. So a BFP is basically a positive pregnancy test.
Right.
And then a BFN is a big fat negative pregnancy test, or really, in this case, a big fucking negative.
Yeah, I like the fucking with the BFN.
Yeah. So, and, I mean, it actually stands for big fat, but I like to say big fucking.
Yeah.
It can go either way. Next, another thing that you will see quite a bit, and which is one of my favorite things in the world, is POAS.
Mm-hmm.
POAS is pee on a stick, which a lot of people like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Pee on a
stick. Cough, cough.
Now, then of course, there is BD. BD.
Yes, let's talk about BD.
let's talk about BD. BD is short for baby dance.
Right.
In other words, sex, people.
Yeah.
It's sex. Yeah. So, first of all, with these acronyms in general, like, I think it's hilarious. Like, obviously, we're using acronyms to kind of, I mean, shorten the time because we're talking about these things so often. But also, there's this level of, like, modesty that I think is funny. And I think it's funny that not only are we calling it Aunt Flo, which is like this modesty level from like, I don't know, the 50s or something, but we're also abbreviating it, you know, and it's the same thing with BD. So actually we, on our forum, we had had like a separate spinoff group and we kind of shunned the term BD because we just thought it was too ridiculous. So we would start to use DTD, did the deed, or BMS was like baby making sex.
Oh, that wasn't my favorite though. My favorite were these little icons. And I still remember seeing this, which was basically you had a pink circle for her and a blue circle for him. And they would literally have a little bed with the pink circle underneath the blue circle and the bed would rock. And that would come up. And I was like, that is, I remember the first time I saw that, I think I fell out of my chair laughing. So those would, I love the icons. If you guys don't do forums at all, I recommend you just do them just to be able to see some of the icons they have specifically for when people are getting it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I just like to say baby making lovin'.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's much. I mean, seriously, guys, we're talking about cervical mucus. Just say sex. Although I get on the forums why you wouldn't want to, because then, you know, the Google machine would go crazy and like start, you know, doing all these.
I don't even know if it's that. I think the thing is, and again, we talk about levels. I think when you first start out, there's still an innocence that's there with it. And
that's
true. Your modesty is definitely there. I mean, as I said before, a year ago, walking into the, not no, not even a year ago, 2 years ago, or even when I started this whole mess, walking into a post office and saying anything about pre-seed. I mean, I was super secretive when we first brought pre-seed. Now it's like, whatever. I just, I don't even care. And not only do I not even care, I'm more than happy to talk to people about what's going on to the point that they are clearly embarrassed.
Like, I'm at the point now where if I'm buying OPKs and HPTs, ovulation predictor kits and home pregnancy tests at the pharmacy, and I take it to the cashier and the cashier does not say good luck, I would be pissed. I'd be offended.
Oh, really? Oh, well then I should have sent you a good luck note.
Because I feel bad. First of all, you totally should have, but it's okay. You wished me luck on stuff, but like, seriously, I just bought a bunch of ovulation predictor kits and home pregnancy tests. What do you think I'm doing? Okay. Wish me luck. Seriously.
Yeah,
they're embarrassed.
It is hard.
I just came up to your thing in line, and you are spending 5 minutes of your life with me, and you are seeing this. Why be embarrassed by the fact that I'm trying to make a baby?
I hear you, but I will also say my mother-in-law talks about the days when she would go to the pharmacy just to buy pads. And you would have to go and buy them at the pharmacy, and then they would literally put them into a brown paper bag to cover up
Here's
what you had.
The thing.
So, like, I mean, this is...
I didn't realize how much I was missing this until literally a few weeks ago, where I did exactly this. I walked into a pharmacy, I bought OPKs, and I bought HPTs.
Uh-huh.
This happened.
Uh-huh.
And not only did I do that, I also bought nicotine patches because at the same time, listeners, I quit smoking. Yeah, you should know this. I haven't smoked for a week. Yay. So again, I mean, I quit smoking for the 15,000th time, but it's sticking so far, which is good. So I bought OPKs, I bought HPTs, and I bought nicotine patches. And the cashier was a guy.
Yeah.
And he looked down, he took my credit card, and then he said good luck.
Oh, nice. I'm glad that he did do that. That's good. Because I will tell you, most guys that I check out with, they won't even make eye contact with me. Now, I don't even have the nicotine patches, but usually it's the, so home pregnancy test stands for HPT. With the HPTs, they shuttle me through really, really quick. And I guess I've just gotten used to it. Part of it is because most of the cashiers that are guys are also, they look like they're 15, they're pimply, so... It's just, you know, I don't want to go there.
Plus the other thing, like if you're just buying HPTs, you know, they never know whether you actually want the pregnancy or
right,
not.
That's true. That's true. So I guess
on the other hand, if you're buying a myriad of pee sticks, not just the HPTs, but the OPKs as well, that means you want a pregnancy. So it's totally okay to wish a person luck.
Oh, we're going to start a trend. From here on out, it's going to become required that if you go to Walgreens, that you get a good luck by the time you're done. I love it.
Yeah, no, we should make a meme out of it or something, you know, like OPK plus HPT at the cashier. Wish me luck, bitches.
Yep, I like it. I do like it.
Yeah. If you are a pharmaceutical cashier listening to this show right now, or you have a friend that is a pharmaceutical cashier, you see that combination of products, people, throw the woman a bone. Yep. I mean, she's going through a hard time. Give her some love.
Agreed. Okay, so we went on this tangent based on the baby dance or baby making sex or doing the deed, which we had a good snicker about doing the deed. But I still love the icons. But the other acronyms that come up that were throwing me forever. So you'll hear people talk about DH. So D, the D before anything, like those two letters, is always for dear. So DH is dear husband. You can also have DS, which is dear son. DD for dear daughter. DP for dear partner. Depends upon, or even I saw a DB, which confused me because we were talking about BD and then it was DB, which is dear boyfriend. So just be aware. If it's two and you see a D, it's always for dear. So again, Shelley's talking about 1950s type mentality, same idea. So
Can I just say something? Like, okay, Shelley, I know you use DH, so I hope you don't take offense to this, but I seriously think DH is really lame. Like, just in general, doing like the dear in front of stuff, that really is, it just screams Stepford Wife.
Well, but you figure for first, again, this is
I'll tell you why I do it.
Who says that?
I don't say that. I only do it on my blog because I felt like it was lame. Like, I didn't feel comfortable. Not as lame, but I just didn't feel comfortable coming up with, like, a pithy nickname for him.
Okay.
You know, enough. So I was like, it's just easier just to say DH. I don't know. I felt like everyone has a pithy nickname for their husband, and I just didn't feel like going there, I guess.
Maybe you're just not creative enough for pithy nickname, Shelley. That's what it is. Just admit it.
Oh, thanks.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. You know, I'm kidding. I'm not even being all judgy about the DH thing. Like, because seriously, I don't mind that you do the DH thing. Like, with you, it's okay because you're not, you know, you're just not pithy, and that's okay. And not only that, you know, you're not like, you know, an IF bot in your blog or a prego bot now that you're pregnant. So I'm totally okay with you using DH. I think my problem is with the Stepford Wife crowd using DH.
Well, but again, that comes with the territory. And the other thing is that as you start getting into the forums, everybody's doing it. And I didn't want to identify Gray at that point in time. And it felt weird to sit down and be talking about Gray on the forums not using DH because everybody else was. So it was a quick two-letter thing that I could put in that from there, especially for people I had just met, and it was more like acquaintances for just being able to get information, it worked. So I understand. I hear what you're saying, but I also remember, and even if I was to go back to the general large forum and start talking, I would not refer to him as Gray. I would refer to him as DH. Now that said, as I got to know people and was starting to use my first name and talking with people, then that's where, I mean, Gray is it's a nickname I have for him in real life. And so it made sense to go ahead and that's how I refer to him on my blog. So that's how
I mean, yeah, I call Schmerson everywhere. I don't just call him Schmerson on the blog. So that makes sense. And Shelley, I hope you don't take offense at the whole like anti-DH rant. Cause you know, it's not like personal. It's just like a thing, right? You're not mad, right?
No, it's fine.
But I think the thing that is important is also be aware of your audience. So I like with the forums, with the more personal forum, with the tight forum that we have this subgroup that we're a part of where everybody knows one another because a lot of us have been there for so long, then it's a different story. And then I'm much more personal and much more open. But that's with true. The forums, that's I mean, true. I have a code name that I go by. And when you see me, you don't actually know a lot about me other than what I choose to show. And so then I use DH. So.
No, that makes perfect sense. Like, I never actually thought about it that way. Like, I always just thought about it like it because I was never – see, my problem – here's my thing with – I'm just anti-forum in general. And the reason I'm anti-forum is because they're just way too perky for me. Like most of the forums I've been on are just way, way too perky. And then they use the two most annoying things I have ever encountered in my life.
Which is?
And that is sticky beans and baby dust.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about those. Let's talk about baby dust.
Now, what is, my God.
What is baby dust?
Oh, dear God. I have such an issue with baby dust thing. I've
been sending you baby dust for like months now, Mo. So I don't know if it's getting returned or something.
here's the thing. I'm sorry, Shelly. I have been rejecting your baby dust, and maybe it's because maybe that's why I've had such a hard time getting pregnant.
That's it.
Yeah, maybe. But like, okay, let's just break this down for a second. Dust made out of babies.
Well, no, that's like, not what it's supposed to be.
You're too literal.
Yeah, you're too literal. No.
Okay, I know it's supposed to be like a play on fairy dust and like baby dust. Yeah, you have. No, for me, I have what I get is dust made out of babies.
Okay,
and that just creeps me the fuck out.
Well, I think the other thing is that when you enter year three or when you become a veteran of this community. Anything that is being sprinkled on you in a light, happy, Barbie-ish manner, you just want to strangle the person.
Especially if it's, like, pink and sparkly.
Right.
You just want to, you know, with lots of smileys, like, ew, sticky bean! No, I just can't. So, yeah, that's the other thing. Like, when a woman on these forums announces that she's pregnant, everybody wishes her a sticky bean. In other words, like, don't have a miscarriage.
Yep.
Right.
So the baby or the embryo is supposedly the bean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing, and I wrote about this once. Anybody who's read my blog kind of knows this already, but so I'm sorry if I'm like repeating myself, but most people don't read my blog because seriously, my blog's been boring. So here's the point. I have a whole thing where when you combine sticky bean and baby dust, what happens is you've got a really dusty bean.
Dusty bean.
Because you've got the dust and you've got the sticky stuff, and like what happens when you spread dust on glue, the stuff is not sticky anymore.
It totally counteracts it.
So not only is it creepy because you're making dust out of babies, but the two together cancel each other out.
So I'm gonna counter that by saying I am hard pressed to meet anybody that's been in this community for any amount of time that hasn't spread dust at least once. I think you get caught up.
Even if you didn't call it dust, you've spread dust.
You have. I'm sorry. You've been Tinkerbell.
I said crossing fingers, toes, and eyes.
That's me. And you know that I still do that. I don't cross eyes.
Crossing fingers, toes, and eyes is fine. I have never once in my life, except in a derogatory context, use the word sticky bean or baby dust.
Okay. I have to put a disclaimer for our readers. Obviously, we're the bitter and fertile, so we get to laugh about this stuff, but the forums are good.
They are.
For information, especially when you're starting out and you're groping in the dark and you have no one to talk to because for whatever reason, you don't want to talk to real-life people about this stuff, the forums are a good way to make connections.
Agree. And the other thing is keep in mind with any of this stuff, when somebody is sprinkling dust on you, even if it irks the hell out of you, which obviously it does Mo, it is coming with the best of intentions and it is way of sitting down and saying, good luck, I'm really hoping for you.
Yes, I know. Listen, I'm a cynical bitch, people. I really am. I know this. I'm just a cynical bitch, and this is what I do, and, you know, this is part of the reason you love me. The forums are wonderful. I have found myself, I've never, ever actually been an active participant in the forums, but oh my God, the amount of times Dr. Google has led me to a TTC forum and that it's helped me out in some way, I cannot count the amount of times that's happened.
And as Shelly and I can testify too, I mean, this is how we found one another, was through the forums. And there's still the forum that I'm not actively participating in it right now because I needed it a break. But the women that are there, I've become as close with them, if not closer, than most people I've met in real life. And yep. So in a lot of ways, they've been amazing. So you can really form some strong friendships there that can last a lifetime too. So that's something to keep in mind, is to go in with an open mind. For some people it works, for some people it doesn't. But like anything else, try it.
Yeah, just stay away from the ones that have like a lot of like sparkly stuff in their signatures. That's all I'm saying. Just too much sparkle is just a little. I'm sorry. No, that's not true. Okay, the forums are lovely and wonderful, and you should totally go there when you need support. Just please never ever wish me sticky beans or baby dust.
Exactly.
Wish anybody else. Just never ever ever wish me sticky beans or baby dust because I just find it sick and counterproductive.
We've got a birthday present coming your way. You know that. You know.
Yeah, we're gonna have to send you like a package full of glitter or something.
Yeah, and I'm thinking with a glue stick and a bunch of beans too.
So and beans and glue.
Beans and glitter. That's practical, ladies.
Oh,
that's
it'll be awesome though. It'll be absolutely awesome. Okay, so off of that rant, what else have we got as far as acronyms? So we've covered some of the basic ones.
US is a big one too.
US is ultrasound. So, and the other one to think about, so we talked about first morning urine that comes up as FMU. Mm-hmm. So, and then pee on a stick. So whether
we did
POAS, good. And then obviously IVF, which is a form of fertility treatment, and then IUI. And so that gets into some of the basic ones. Things that you'll start seeing as you get it more advanced. I had to go and look for this one because there was actually a quiz on how well do you know your acronyms, was something called TESA. T-E-S-A.
TESA?
T-E-S-A?
T-E-S-A.
Hmm.
You stumped me.
Okay, so that one stumped me too. So this is for guys that either are not making sperm or they've gone through a vasectomy, and it's a procedure where they literally stick a needle into the testicle and they extract sperm.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah, so it's like when you start, as you find, as you go more advanced, your acronyms get significantly more fun. So, but I think there are quizzes out there. So that's one thing I should find. I'll find a quiz to test your fertility acronyms.
And then we'll see. We'll test your acronym metal readers. But you know, this is, we're starting to run long. So I think this is a really good place to kind of wrap up. Cause you know, the more advanced stuff we talk about all the time, unfortunately. And
that's true.
You know, So I mean, I think this was really good. And okay, so everybody out there, all our lovely listeners, if you know, if this was not news to you, it might be news to a friend of yours. So give them this episode and spread the love. And for all you newly suspected infertiles out there, I'm not gonna wish you baby dust. I'm just not. I'm sorry. But good luck.
There we go. What she will do is she will wish that when you buy all the necessary materials for testing for the cycle, that the cashier wishes you luck. How about that?
Yes. I wish you endlessly polite cashiers who don't care about too much information. That is what I wish you. And also, just so you guys know, and I also wish you very discreet pharmacists.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I will wish you that. Like, I have to say this, just, you know, because we didn't really do a lighter note except my whole anti-baby dust rant. I'm sorry. But, okay, so I go to a pharmacy this week, and this is to pick up a new dose of my lovely antidepressants, and I admit I was having some problems down there in terms of my backside, in terms of I was constipated.
No.
Ah.
Yeah, so it was not fun, and I wanted to do something about it. So I go up to the pharmacist, because over here, the anti-constipation stuff is behind the counter. It's not just available on a shelf. So I go up to the pharmacist, hand her my new antidepressant prescription, and then very quietly tell her, and also, do you have something that's good but not too aggressive for constipation? I say it very quietly, like she has to lean in to hear me, and then she's like, oh, yeah, let me check
you know, what I've got in terms of strength stuff and blah, 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 blah. So I go, and then another person is starting to ring up my antidepressants, and she comes up, and I have never seen anything, this has never happened to me before in my life. She literally, in the loudest voice possible, is walking up to me at the counter saying, "You wanted something for constipation, right?"
Oh, God. Thanks.
That's the point of time. Just gotta run with it. I know it's embarrassing, but you gotta run with it and be like, you know, because at that point in time, they know. And it's only gonna get more embarrassing because they're gonna sit down and keep asking you about things out loud. So it's just like, just go with it.
No, but see, I looked at her. I gave her such a stare of death that she was like, she looked around. She's like, "Oh shit, I just did that. Oops." And then she apologized. But. Yeah. Like, see, because I don't care if people know about my lady parts at this point, because really, that's public knowledge. But my poop, like, okay, so I'm okay about talking about my poop on this show. That's fine, because here, like, seriously, we've got no boundaries. But in the middle of a pharmacy, do not announce my poop issues to the world.
It's like common sense.
It really is. Yes,
and no. I mean, it's hard.
They're desensitized.
There's that. And then the other thing is they're tired.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's one of those where it's like, I mean, at least she looked at you and apologized. Imagine if she had just sat there and looked at you back.
Yeah, that's true. But then on the other side, cashier wished me luck, like, a couple days before that. So, you know, yeah, it's all good.
You can't have it all. You can't have your baby dust and your sticky beans,
too. Yeah, you can't. It's got to be one or the other. Because, again, the baby dust cancels out the sticky beans. You cancel each other out. So are we forgetting anything? I think we covered everything pretty much for beginners, right?
We've got what we need.
The 101.
Yep. So I think it's enough. We'll put up links so that if people really want to dive in, or more appropriately, if you are sitting at the dinner table and you have your naive friend, younger sister, whoever, who's sitting down and looking at you about whatever, you have something that in a huff you can sit down and say, "Look, go here. Go read. Figure it out." So.
Yeah. Or go listen to this podcast, because then you'll get, you know, entertained while getting informed and educated. This is what we do, people.
This is what we do.
Anyway, so email us, bitterandfertiles@gmail.com. Go to our website, bitterandfertiles.wordpress.com, and click follow on the blog so you can know when we have new episodes. Or follow us on Twitter also to know when we have new episodes, @bitterinfertile without the S. Or the best way to know when we have new episodes is to subscribe on iTunes. And that's, you know, really easy. Okay, so thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful, amazing... We all had kind of crappy 2012s, and we're looking forward to amazing 2013s. So we are wishing all of you guys amazing 2013s, and may they be endlessly better than 2012s. Because if your 2012 was anything like mine, it can only get better from here, people.
Yep, it was a leap year. It was a year of change.
Yes.
Meaning only things, good things can come from here on out.
Exactly. So happy new year, and we will see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye.